The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back, I might be in jail, I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek, and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up when you did it. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines, known as USA Inc. Today's date is February the 29th, 2016. I believe this is the last day of February. Yes, it is. Tomorrow will be March the 1st. Got the North Carolina primaries coming up here in just a couple of weeks. Good afternoon to you as I broadcast from North Carolina, and I hope that you are safe and sound behind these enemy lines as much as possible. Have a couple of news stories that I would like to share with you today, but before I do that, let me give the telephone numbers in case anyone else in the listening audience would like to share. The telephone number for the conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit star 6 and 1 to comment on air. The flash phone is also available. You use those same numbers to use the flash phone. And the studio line, that telephone number is 704-951-5030. Again, that phone number is 704-951-5030. Here is a quick rundown of about four stories that I would like to share with you today. There's so much that I wanted to share, but it's impossible to share everything. So make sure that you follow our different social media profiles, as we do share a whole lot of news stories, whether it's Political Prisoner Radio on Facebook, Black Talk Radio Network as well, New Abolitionist Radio. Our media partners also share a lot of great information via social media, and you can find most of their social media accounts right from the front page of blacktalkradionetwork.com. As you can see, the social media widgets on the right side of the website. Now, the stories that I want to share with you today, the five teens that were falsely accused in Brooklyn, New York, of raping a 18-year-old woman after forcing her father to leave by gunpoint. Those charges have been dropped. I think they were starting to call those five young men the Brooklyn Five. Kind of similar case to, not really that similar, but sort of similar to the Central Park Five case that happened, what, over 20-something years ago before those young men were cleared of raping a white woman in Central Park, the Central Park Jogger, as she was known. So I want to share a little bit of information about that case and also relay to the listening audience why prosecutors and getting prosecutors like Ken Thompson elected into office does matter. And I think it is showing why it matters to have a person who has a track record of practicing justice in such an important local position of a prosecutor or a district attorney. You may have also heard the news over the weekend that Melissa Harris Perry, she had a talk television program on MSNBC, and she has quit her program in a highly public fashion, some would even say in an emotional fashion. There's a number of things that I would like to discuss concerning not just Melissa Harris Perry, but all of the, let's just say, showcase people, all the black journalists, we'll just call them black journalists, and those who have an interest in getting information out to the people. They should be creating their own platforms like we have done here at Black Talk Radio. You know, obviously, it is not that hard to do. It is not hard to do. Melissa Harris Perry and a number of black journalists, I don't see why they don't put their coins together and create their own news network, you know, using modern technology. I don't know if all the listeners are aware of the different YouTube news programs that you can look at. It looks no different than television. You know, if they have the money to invest in a set, get the right equipment and everything, like the Young Turks. The Young Turks is a pretty popular web-based news program, and you can't tell the difference between it and a corporate media production because technology is technology, all right? And so I don't see why these people are not, you know, moving in that direction. But now, the reason she quit, they were saying that, or she was saying that, was because they were preempting her show and she hadn't been on in weeks because they were preempting her show, which I think only comes on Saturdays in the morning time, and to cover campaign elections and stuff like that. And she, you know, didn't like it and she quit. Now, I'm hearing from an article I came across that really this started or culminated with a fight behind the scenes with the producers of Melissa Harris Perry, the network bosses and whatnot. They had a little fight over a segment that she wanted to do and did, featuring Beyonce's new song, Formation, which has been getting a whole lot of press since she released it the day before the Super Bowl. And then, you know, you throw in her Super Bowl halftime performance, and a whole lot of people been talking about the Black Panther Party and talking about the video Formation. Now, the video Formation, while it has some provoking images or provocative images and whatnot, if you read the lyrics of the song, it's pretty much just typical your standard corporate media garbage from your corporate record companies and whatnot. But she wanted to feature it on her program. I'm speaking of Melissa Harris Perry, and they didn't want her to do it, and she did it anyway after a long fight with her producers. And some say that may be why they started preempting her program. South Carolina. Been talking about a lot about South Carolina in the past couple of weeks. They had a primary coming up. A lot of focus was put on South Carolina because corporate media said that that will be the first of the early voting states, the states that are doing the primaries and the caucuses to select the nominees of the various, well, I should say the two major political parties, which is the Republicans and the Democrats, in that, you know, the other states like New Hampshire, like Iowa, are predominantly white, which they are. And so people were looking forward to see how a large voting block of black voters would who they would support in a primary. And so the exit polls are in, and the exit polls for the Democratic Party show that black voters accounted for 6 out of 10 ballots cast for Democrats, right? And upwards of 80% of those black voters who voted in the primaries of the 60% of the ballots cast in the Democratic South Carolina primary. 80% of them voted for Hillary Clinton, helping her to win the state. And, you know, I'm just trying to figure out, well, what kind of political lessons can we take away from this besides the obvious? And the obvious to me is that black voters are acting a lot like Republican voters who have, and I would say it has been an accurate statement to say that Republicans often vote against their own interests in voting for candidates that want to destroy the social safety net that many of them, I would say the majority of the people who are on the social safety net are white. Republicans typically in red states have the highest poverty rates. And so I think that black voters are exhibiting the same behavior and showing their support for a woman who played no small role in the mass incarceration, aka modern enslavement of black people in this country, who also did a whole lot of stomping on, you know, the campaign trail for her husband, Bill Clinton, and the different policies that he passed that has harmed a lot of people. And so, you know, besides that, what other political lessons can we take away from South Carolina in this primary battle, primarily on the Democratic side? Because Republicans, I don't think too many black people are even trying to hear what the Republicans have to say, because it's pretty much the same old, same old. But anyway, want to take a look at that, take a look at some of that data, and see what kind of lessons we can take away from that. Also, while black voters were busy helping Hillary Clinton to victory on Saturday, at the same time, Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam was giving a sermon in which he called Hillary Clinton a wicked woman. And I would also say that that's an accurate statement about Hillary Clinton. And you know, for people that actually know the Clintons, that have actually done the research of their long, long, long political career, going back to even when Hillary Clinton was a teenager, a senior, you know, she was a Republican at the time. So, yeah, I want to take a look at, those are some of the stories that we can take a look at today. Again, if you have anything you would like to share or comment on any of these stories, you can do so, giving us a call on the conference line, which is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. Let's see, the studio line, 704-951-5030. Now, let's go ahead and jump to this first story. Coming to you from the Washington Post. This story was pretty big story. I guess I've reached my limit of subscriptions, of articles I can read on the Washington Post, so I can't pull it up right now, but you may be able to pull up the article, so I'll just speak on it from memory. A lot of people heard about the case of the young lady who was in a children's playground. I guess it was adjacent to some apartment buildings or whatnot. But anyway, she was in this children's playground with her father. It was around 9 o'clock at night. The initial story that came out was that, you know, these five teens came across them in this playground, and that they pulled a gun out and forced the father to leave, and then they raped his daughter. And there were many, many questions coming out, you know, even with the initial report, and people were saying, like, who would leave their child to be raped, you know, to be gang raped? And, you know, people were saying things like, you know, they just would have had to shoot me, because I would not have abandoned my daughter to be gang raped by these people. And so, but as it turns out, that was not the case at all. And these young men have seen their charges drop after prosecutors and investigators looked at the video and you know, determined that it was consensual sex, that this woman consented to have sexual relations with all five of these teenagers, these black young black boys who had sex with her and recorded it on their cell phones. And if not, for them recording that, and I don't want to sound like I'm trying to, you know, say that, you know, people should engage in such behavior in recording their sexual escapades and whatnot, but it appears that by them recording that, that may have actually provided the evidence that they needed to prove that they did not rape this woman. Now, the sickest part of this story is that the young men also said that when they came across the two, the father and the daughter, that the father was having sex with the daughter. Okay, and I mean that's just really, really sad, and that's just really, really sick. And the prosecutors actually do want to charge the father. Well, first, I guess it's important to note that we're talking about an 18-year-old woman. We're not talking about a child. We're not talking like a 13-year-old or something like that. We're talking about an 18-year-old woman who could consent to have sex. But now this I'm not sure of, because different states have different laws, but I'm aware that a number of states do have laws against incest. Speaking of South Carolina, which I live right next door to, in a sense, right across the border, but in South Carolina, you can marry your second cousin. So, you know, as long as it's not your first cousin, your sister, or you know, close relative like that, then I guess they frown upon that. But second cousins is okay in South Carolina. So, but the prosecutors do want to charge the father for having sex with his daughter in an incestuous relationship, but the young woman is not cooperating. One of the things that Ken Thompson, who is the prosecutor who made the final decision in this case not to charge these young men after reviewing the evidence, Ken Thompson, he noted that, you know, this woman is still a victim, whether or not she consented to have sex with these young men, which she did, according to the evidence, according to the cell phone video that was taken by one of the young men. But he also noted that she was victimized by her father, you know, and Ken Thompson said that, you know, these young men, I'm paraphrasing what he said because I don't have the article in front of me. He said that while what they engaged in this group sex with this young woman, while it was not criminal, it is a behavior that should be concerning to people. And I guess what he was getting at is that these young men should have had more respect for women than to, you know, perpetrate a gangbang upon this woman. And so, you know, people have their taste, I suspect, according to, you know, what kind of sex they like to engage in. And I'm not one for even getting into all of that and telling people how they should, you know, live their lives in that manner. But I think he does have a point. And, you know, other people were saying that it is the environment here in America that would have these young men seeing nothing wrong with, you know, running a gangbang on a woman that they just met in a park late at night and what have you. And I think he's right. You know, for many years, I have issued reports and shared reports about the sexualization of teens and, you know, girls and whatnot through corporate media. And it's a problem, whether we're talking about movies, whether we're talking about TV shows, whether we're talking about music that, you know, is misogynist in nature and even talks about, you know, just mistreating people and whatnot. That does have an effect on young people. And, you know, that gets into, you know, First Amendment speech rights and censorship and whatnot. But I think that, you know, we do have to draw a line somewhere in the sand of what's okay and what's not okay in terms of media that is being promoted to the public. Because, you know, as Malcolm X has said that media does control the minds of the masses. And, you know, here's a quote. He was talking about, you know, the media making a person look guilty when they're not guilty, or making a person look innocent when in fact they are guilty of a great crime. The media has that power to control the minds, and the media has that kind of mind control over people, to where it can modify their behaviors and whatnot. I just really don't think people realize just how powerful the media is. So I also want to point out in this case that if it had been, let's say, the prosecutor who preceded Ken Thompson in Brooklyn, that these boys probably would still be facing charges regardless of what any evidence showed in terms of their innocence, because we've seen it, what, in the Central Park 5 case. You know, despite any kind of evidence that would show that, you know, they're not guilty, you know, we've seen all too often in a lot of wrongful conviction cases that prosecutors ignore evidence, investigators, police ignore evidence, and they're just looking for a quick conviction and whatnot. And they will even doctor evidence and engage in what's called prosecutorial misconduct in order to obtain convictions. So this is a case where I want to point out where your votes do matter, you know. And I'm not trying to convince people to vote or whatnot. People, pretty much, if you're a grown adult, you made your mind up. I'm not trying to convince you, okay? But I am on here to inform people who do vote, all right? And this is, in my opinion, one of the areas that it matters most, that we get the right kind of people in these offices, especially on a local level where, you know, these prosecutors literally have our lives in their hands. You do not want incompetent people, but more importantly, you don't want immoral people in these offices. And you know, as we have shown on this network through various programming, when you look out across the United States, you know, predominantly, you will find that prosecutors are white males, primarily white males. And, you know, we could point to the demographics, the nation's population and whatnot. And, you know, obviously, you have more white people in this country than you have anyone else. So it is likely that you're going to get predominantly white people filling these positions. But, you know, that is no give me. That is no give me. You know, if you organize, if you make the right alliances against a person, let's say you want to get a prosecutor, a crooked prosecutor out of office, then you need to make the right alliances and form coalitions and whatnot to get that person out of office. Same way to get a person that you believe will do their very best in practicing justice, all right, and not practicing racism from that office, then, you know, you need to build coalitions to get that person elected. And Ken Thompson has been doing, I've been reporting on a number of stories because he has been behind reopening a lot of cases where people had been wrongfully convicted by the prosecutor who preceded him and whatnot. And he, because of his work and his desire to practice justice, you know, quite a few people have seen their convictions overturned. And see, he could be just like most of them, and he's the new guy in the office, and you know, he just won the election, and he comes in there and he's not trying to look backwards. Who said that? President Obama famously said that when he was elected. We're not trying to look backwards. We're trying to look forward and whatnot. Well, thank goodness that Ken Thompson looked backwards at the person who was in office preceding him and looked at those cases to make sure that, you know, these convictions were done with integrity and whatnot, and he found that a whole lot of the cases were not. And I'm thinking of this one particular former NYPD detective by the name, I think it was Louis Scarcella, who is tied to a number of cases that Ken Thompson has uncovered, where Scarcella was engaged in manufacturing evidence and whatnot. And, you know, the other prosecutor went along with it. So, again, I think that voting is important. And, you know, that just electing presidents and senators and congressmen, you know, that shouldn't be the only reason that you're going to vote, because, you know, a whole lot of elective offices in your local area, in your county, in your city will have more impact on you directly than what goes on in Washington, D.C. Not to say that what they do in Washington, D.C. doesn't have ramifications for everyone, but you're more directly impacted through your local governments in those elected positions than you are by somebody in Washington, D.C. All right, because, you know, if you get framed for murder, you know, you better hope you got a Ken Thompson who's going to weigh all the evidence objectively and come to a decision. And he's going to go where the evidence leads him, and he's not going to manufacture evidence just to build up his conviction rate and whatnot. So shout out to Ken Thompson, and I know those young men are happy that they will not be facing the same fate as the Central Park Five. And I'm glad to see that these charges were dropped, but I hope they also learned a lesson from this. You know, I hope that going forward they won't be running any gangbangs on women in the future. I hope that they, you know, develop a healthy respect for women, and to where they wouldn't take advantage of a woman like that. You know, even though she consented to it, this woman has a lot of problems. She came up in foster care, and, you know, I heard Ken Thompson talking about that and didn't even know her father. And they only like reconnected recently. I still don't explain why he would have sex with her and whatnot. But, you know, this case just has so many different issues that you can raise, you know, with the foster care system that destroys family connections and whatnot. And, you know, just a whole lot to take note of. But I'm glad that these young men won't be going to prison behind this, and I just hope everybody involved gets the help that they need, they most desperately need, in my opinion. All right, I'm going to take a station identification break and come back and jump on this story about Melissa Harris Perry quitting her anchor position at MSNBC. I don't know if we could call that an anchor position, but simply her talk show host position at MSNBC, as you know, she quit over the weekend and told people that she wasn't nobody's mammy or pickaninny or brown bobblehead and stuff like that. So I mean, it's a pretty interesting story that has many different avenues we can tackle. So stay tuned, we'll be back on the other side of this quick break.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Melissa Harris Perry has walked off the MSNBC show she's hosted for the past 4 years. Why? The television personality, who also doubles as a professor at Wake Forest, said in an email to coworkers this past week she feels worthless after her self-titled program has, in her words, been taken away without discussion or notice by the network, leaving her effectively and utterly silenced. This follows Harris Perry not appearing on the channel in weeks due to preemptions in favor of election coverage. Despite explicitly telling the New York Times she did not feel race played a role in her recent absence, Harris Perry did go on to say in her email, "I will not be used. I am not a token, mammy, or little brown bobblehead. I am not owned by lack, Griffin, or MSNBC. The reaction across social media has been split, with ardent sentiments being expressed from both sides. Many have come out in support, like Shoshana posting, "Hey, at MSNBC, I hope you're happy selling your soul, hoping you'll get Fox News-type ratings. I support your decision, Melissa Harris-Perry." But others took it differently, like at Beckett Adams declaring, "A lot of people discovering what many figured out a while ago. Melissa Harris-Perry is a self-important drama queen. Yikes." Joy Reid is expected to take over Harris Perry's 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Saturday time slot, as she's been filling in for the last couple of weeks.
All right, so that was a clip that I found on NewYorkDailyNews.com. I have linked to the story if you want to check it out and whatnot. So I just, you know, my initial thought of this is that, you know, she got emotional. Over not being able to do her show at the regularly scheduled time. From what I've read, you know, her show only came on like Saturdays. I couldn't tell you because I didn't watch her show. You know, I watch clips on the internet and whatnot if it was a topic that interests me, but I don't watch these shows like that. I will tune in to get information if they're going to be talking about something that I want to hear about. So anyway, her contract was supposed to expire this year anyway. And a couple of people agreed that it was highly unlikely that she would have came back to the show after October. Or I guess they're saying they don't think that her contract would have been renewed. And I noticed a lot of people have also been talking about, you know, a purge, so to speak, of these black faces that we see on corporate news television. Joy Reid lost her show. A couple of commentators, black women who would be brought on, black men as well, also weren't being brought on anymore and whatnot. And there's been some conversation about these people are no longer needed, with President Obama being on his way out of the Oval Office, and they were only brought on so that they could explain black people to I guess, white audiences or whatnot. I don't know. I really don't know. But I would not have done what she did in the manner that she did it. You know, it's her life. It's her job or whatnot. So, you know, she has every right to do it however she want to do it. But it doesn't look professional. It doesn't look like she was, it just seemed like she got overly emotional. Now, look, in terms of her show being preempted for election campaign coverage, I don't see what that is to get upset and quit your job over. Now, I'm also hearing that during their special coverage of the different election campaigns, she wasn't participating. She wasn't allowed. She wasn't invited, however they were doing it. To come on and be a participant in this election, special election coverage or campaign coverage and whatnot. So, again, this could be, you know, just something that has been simmering for quite some time. And, you know, she just said, this is it. This is the final straw. I'm quitting. And again, you know, that's her life choice. But I just think that she's coming off a little as being emotional with her commentary, you know, and she is not being, you know, consistent in giving her reasons and why she quit. You know, for one, she told them that, you know, she doesn't think racism had to do with it. But then, you know, telling other people that, yeah, you know, racism does have something to do with it. I'm not owned by you and this or that. But listen, whenever you are employed by someone, they do own you for, you know, own your time, own your body, so to speak. You know, you may not look at it as ownership in terms of slavery, because, you know, I don't compare it to slavery where people have no choice and whatnot. But if you can sign a contract, you know, with somebody to do something, to work for them, then they do, in fact, you know, call the shots. You do have to go by their rules or you leave. Like, I guess she did. She said, I'm leaving. I don't like this and I'm leaving and whatnot. So you really don't have that much autonomy from the people I've talked to that's worked in the industry. You really don't have that kind of autonomy, that you're basically reading from a teleprompter. And that, you know, Melissa Harris Perry, I don't know how much input she had in her show, but there seems to have been, again, since the Super Bowl, some fights going on behind the scene. And when I say fight, I'm not talking about, you know, physical fights, but verbal fights over the content of her program, because it the article talks about she wanted to do a segment over Beyonce's new song called Formation, and that her and her staff went back and forth with, you know, their bosses and whatnot over whether or not she was going to be able to do it. And, you know, they yielded at the last minute, and she was able to do the segment. But then that's when they started preempting her program. So, I mean, who could say whether they did that as retaliation against her? I mean, who really can say? You know, a lot of people are looking for campaign coverage and looking to get information. And if you got some primaries going on Saturday and whatnot, then, you know, it makes sense for MSNBC to preempt its regular coverage. But again, why wasn't she included? So, you know, I guess only she can answer that. I mean, I know there's two sides to every story, but the one that we're getting is that, you know, she basically just quit because she didn't like how things were going. And I just don't think if you're going to quit a job, like I tell my daughters, you always want to put in a 2 weeks notice, and you want to do it in writing, because, you know, you don't want other employers, prospective employers, hearing that you just walked off the job and you left them hanging and whatnot. And you didn't give them time to, you know, bring in your replacement or whatnot. That's just typically frowned upon in the corporate world, you know, and that's at least how I've tried to conduct myself on the job, is to do everything by the book, not to give them any additional reasons for, you know, not employing me or what have you. So, you know, my only thing is that she shouldn't have let it get so emotional or whatnot. Now, this woman, I'm sure, ain't living from paycheck to paycheck, so she'll be okay, I'm sure. Now, but this also leads me back to something I had talked about in the past. There was, I think her name was Goldie Taylor, and she used to be a MSNBC contributor, and she was under contract. And I remember when the story came out that they were not going to renew Miss Taylor's contract, and she was no longer going to be on there and whatnot. And then, you know, I followed a lot of these people on Twitter to see what they're saying and whatnot. But so she was saying she was pretty upset about it. I'm not going to say upset, but let's just say she was disappointed. She was disappointed, you know, about her contract not being renewed and whatnot. So, you know, I was like, I tweeted at her and I was like, you know, why don't you start your own internet-based program? You know, if you got something to say and you feel like what you have to say is important enough that people should hear it, then you shouldn't be relying on white people giving you a platform in order for you to get your message out. You know, you can build your own platform, and there's other platforms that you can use, whether you build your own or not. You know, again, as I was stating at the beginning of the program, you can find news programs on YouTube where people have invested in the equipment, invested in the technology, invested in setting up a you know, news desk, and it looks just like any kind of production that you would see on MSNBC, on Fox News, or any of these other outlets. You can do that. Look at the Young Turks, which is a pretty popular news program that's internet-based. And these guys have a huge audience. I mean, their program is pretty popular. And so, you know, I don't see why a number of these black intellectuals, thinkers and whatnot, political pundits, don't come together and create their own. Right? If you don't like how you're being treated, if you see that you're being mistreated and you're just being used as a proxy tool of racism and whatnot, you can choose not to. You can choose not to go down that road. You can choose not to participate, and you can do your own thing. All right. Now, you may not make as much money as they would pay you or whatnot working for somebody else. You know, it may take a little bit of time for you to build up your revenue and whatnot. But, you know, there's nothing stopping you. And I would like to see more black journalists coming together and creating their own platforms. I mean, some of these people, you know, they have a little bit of money. And, you know, not that they got to put up all their money, but they can do crowdfunding or whatnot. They can get investors to invest in their platforms and whatnot. So, you know, I just don't see other than mental slavery. You know, as I think about what Brother Ralph talked about, you know, our people being mentally enslaved. That's the only thing I could think of why these black intellectuals, these high profile blacks don't come together and create their own independent platform, start their own for profit corporations. They could be for profit, nonprofit, whatever. It's just really no excuse. It's really no excuse with the way more and more people are turning to social media for their information to begin with. Just seems like a perfect fit for them. You know, the internet, using YouTube or, you know, setting up the software on their own private servers in order to stream video. You know, sort of like what we've done with streaming our own audio and whatnot. Setting up a server, putting the software on the server, and then engaging in Black Talk Radio. Why don't they do the same? Why don't they do the same and stop being beholden or dependent on these other people to give you a platform for you to voice your independence, your views, what have you. So, yeah. So I don't imagine, you know, this story getting any bigger or anything like that. But I do think it was worth me talking about in terms of black independent media, because we see it. We see it all the time. You know, we want to fight and we want to say, you know, we need diversity in television. We need diversity on this platform or diversity in that platform, on that platform. Well, you know. If you're not running the platform, they run you then. They run you. They control the words that come out of your mouth. They control whatever topics you can discuss. Sure, you can fight for it behind the scenes, like apparently she did over, you know, being able to do a segment on Beyonce's new song and whatnot. But, you know, then you're going to be embroiled in, you know, fights and things of that nature behind the scenes. It just seems to me that these people should be working to create their own platforms, because there's nothing barring them from doing that. I just really don't see why they shouldn't look to get off of these platforms. I did hear during that clip somebody said something about, you know, now y'all fired Melissa Harris Perry. Now I hope that your ratings become like Fox News. Well, Fox News has the highest damn ratings in the country of any news programming. You know, they have the highest ratings, which is pretty sad considering that it's a racist propaganda outlet. But hell, you know, falls right in line with why we see so many people supporting Donald Trump. You know, even though he is openly being a racist and embracing white supremacy and whatnot. You know, being uncodified in his expressions of white supremacy. They ain't got a problem. The Republican Party ain't got a problem with Donald Trump's racism. What they got a problem with is he's making it too obvious, you know, that, you know, he's killing their plausible deniability and whatnot, because he's just being so straight up with it. And that's Fox News for you. That's Fox News. So anyway, I'm not going to spend a whole lot more time on that guy. Just a couple of more stories that I'm going to share before we jump off air. Tando Radio Show will be coming up at 6 o'clock p.m., so make sure y'all stay tuned for that as we try to get back to our regular broadcasting schedule after some interruptions last week. So right now, I'm going to take a station identification break, and then we'll come back and jump on this next story about the exit polling showing how black voters cast the most ballots in the South Carolina Democratic primary. 6 out of 10 ballots cast were black voters, and then overwhelmingly they supported Hillary Clinton. Man, that's just so sad. But let's talk about it on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind enemy lines.
Force on inmates. They beat up inmates. They planted evidence or weapons in cells.
If an inmate was beaten up, presumably if he made a complaint, there had to be some sort of investigation.
It would be squashed at the management level. It wouldn't go any farther than that. It wouldn't go any farther than probably the supervisor of that yard.
Donald Boddicker is now in hiding. We had to agree his lawyer came to the interview, and we couldn't say where we met them.
Ever since I broke the code of silence, I've lost everything. I've lost friends that I had associated with the Department of Corrections. I've lost some of my family members. I've lost everything. I've lost my career. I've lost financially. It was devastating. I'm on the move all the time.
Why?
Because I'm here for my life, for my life, for my life, for my life.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. All right, so this next story that we want to jump on is concerning the exit polling data. It's some good news. I guess we could look at it in a positive light, but also some very sad news considering who these black voters voted for. I linked to an article on CNN.com. Let's go ahead and see if we can give that a listen. If I can get this media player to work properly, I might be able to. Okay.
I'm going to name a few issues, and I want you to raise your hand if that is the most important voting issue for you in this primary. Education. Education. Income inequality. None of you. Criminal justice reform. You didn't name an issue.
Well, I was waiting on you to ask about the issue of people. And that's one thing about Bernie Sanders is that, you know, a lot of people will say he's a one-issue candidate. I don't necessarily agree with that, but his main issue is the people. And that covers everything you named.
Why are you supporting Secretary Clinton? What is it about her?
There's several things. I think all the persons running, I think she has the best experience to take us to the next level in this country. I like her work in education, working with youth. When you look at what she brings to the table, I think it's going to put America in a place and move President Obama's initiatives further. And I think that she just has what it takes to take us to where we need to be.
So, Tyler.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. I tell you, man, what's really stood out to me is the how black people, black voters, I should say, because we're not talking about all black people because all black people don't vote, but very uninformed, very susceptible to talking points. Like, for example, that man talking about her work in education. Hillary Clinton hasn't worked in education. What is he talking about? When was Hillary Clinton ever a school teacher or a school administrator? What? He's talking about her work over, what, 30, 40 years ago? with some children's education fund or legal defense fund or something like that. I wasn't aware that she had done a lot of work in education. Let me see. We do got a phone call. Let me take this call. Area code 980. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. All right. They hung up. I guess they didn't have anything to share. Yeah, I mean, education. I don't see it. I don't see how Hillary Clinton has done such tremendous work in education or whatnot. But anyway, let me just get to the data. All right, now, according to this article, it says that African American voters are making up a larger portion of the South Carolina Democratic primary electorate than they did in 2008. In 2008, when Barack Obama was running against Hillary Clinton, 55% of voters were black in the Democratic. Again, we're talking about South Carolina. All right. Now, 55% of the voters in the 2008 primary were black, but now African Americans made up 61% of voters in South Carolina. They actually now have a majority. They are the majority of registered voters in South Carolina. That's good. That's good news. I have been reading articles that, you know, if we could credit President Obama with anything, and we could credit him with getting more black people involved in a political process in terms of registering to vote, a lot of new voters, a lot of young voters, we can attribute to President Obama's campaign. A lot of people turned out, not only in 2008, but again in 2012, more new black voters registered. I guess, you know, you had some who were not old enough to vote when he first ran in 2012, but were, I mean, excuse me, 2008, but in 2012, you know, they were eligible and did get registered. So we can credit him with that. All right. Again, this points to not a whole lot of people in the United States actually participate in politics. A minority of any group, whether we're talking about white people, Asian people, Hispanics, we're talking about black people, only a small percentage of those people who can register to vote actually do register to vote and actually turn out to vote. All right. And so this is something Malcolm X talked about a long time ago in his speech, The Ballot or the Bullet. And he talked about, at that time, the power of the African-American or the black vote to determine who gets to become president. It's the example that he used. He said that, you know, white people were evenly divided between two candidates. And then, you know, black people were the deciding vote. You know, whoever they went with, that's who got into office. And he talked about how black people in the 60s put Lyndon B. Johnson back in the office, how they got all these Democrats elected and they didn't get anything in return for their support of those candidates. Well, I guess you could say Lyndon B. Johnson did sign the Civil Rights Act into law. So I'm not going to say they didn't get anything. We can debate on the value of what they did get, but they got something. They did get something. All right. So, but this is what I've been reading in terms of since Obama ran for president in 2008, is that, you know, black voters were really, you know, outnumbering a whole bunch of other different demographics. Now, obviously not all white voters, obviously, but again, most white people are divided between not just Republicans and Democrats, but you got a lot who are libertarians, others who are with the Green Party, the progressive. I mean, you got more than just the Democrats and the Republicans. But this does go to show the power of the black vote when you vote as a block of voters, meaning that you come together and you support the same candidates or the same policies and whatnot. So we're seeing here, though, in South Carolina, that 70 excuse me, how much was it? 80%? Upwards of 80% of the black people who did vote in the Democratic primaries in South Carolina, 84% of them went to Hillary Clinton, 16% went to Bernie Sanders. So they determined who won that particular voting primary. Now, this is one of the early states, and I hope we're not seeing a pattern here. And it's not so much as I want black people to vote for Bernie Sanders because I think he's a swell guy, or he says this or he says that. No, I think that they should support Bernie Sanders because of his platform and how it addresses racism and white supremacy, especially in terms of modern day slavery and private prisons in this country, especially in terms of the things that he said he could do and would do as the executive officer if elected president and using executive authority, like removing cannabis from the DEA scheduled list of dangerous drugs with no medicinal value, something that President Obama refused to do, you know, and whatnot. So the good news is that black people are in a position as a voting bloc. As long as they stick together in determining winners and losers. But the bad news is that they picked a loser to win. And when I say loser, I'm talking about Hillary Clinton is a loser in terms of her humanity or lack thereof. All right. This woman, I'm sure my regular listeners of this station, know I don't like Hillary Clinton. I would even use strong words as to say I hate Hillary Clinton. I know a lot of people are afraid to use the H word, but I'm not. I hate this woman. I hate everything she has done, and I hate everything she will do to harm black people if she gets into office. And it would be a very, very sad commentary if we look back in history and we say that another Clinton got into office because of black voters supporting a racist. And anybody that says that Hillary Clinton is not a racist, does not know Hillary Clinton, has not studied the Clintons, and all their decades of being in politics and the things they have said and the things they have done, if they say they're not racist, then they're either uninformed or they're liars. They're liars and they're looking to get something in exchange from the Clintons. So I hope that this is not a trend. We got Super Tuesday coming up. How will black people vote on Super Tuesday? How will they vote? And it's not a matter of supporting this candidate or supporting that candidate. We shouldn't even be looking at the individual. We should be looking at their policy proposals. We should be looking at the things they have advocated for in the past and why they advocated for those things in the past. Those are the things that should matter. Those are the things that goes into casting an informed vote. But what I'm seeing here, another lesson that I'm seeing here, is that these black showcase people in Congress, and I'm talking like, you know, elected representatives, black super PACs and whatnot, preachers and other people in our community in these positions of so-called leadership, that they have a lot of sway. They have a lot of sway with our people. And you know, not to say that that's a bad thing. If these people in leadership positions were practicing justice or they were fully informed themselves. And a lot of times, in a lot of cases, we're seeing that, especially when you're talking about elected representatives who have been in there for a while, they often are susceptible to the establishment. They're susceptible to, you know, doing things they shouldn't do in exchange for political appointments and other butter biscuits and treats and whatnot. And it's just sad. It's just a very sad commentary, you know. And we have to do something to combat that. We have to build a firewall between the masses of black voters and these people that would mislead them. And we have a lot of work to do. This is work that should have been done, you know, but for whatever reasons it wasn't done, you know. So I'm not looking to blame anybody or talk junk about anybody, but because now we do have people who are stepping up in that regard. And I'm referring to 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. You can find out more information about that movement by going to IamOneOfTheMillion.com, IamOneOfTheMillion.com, where it is the hope of those who are part of that movement. In interest of full disclosure, I am a part of that movement, to where, you know, we are attempting to bring together a independent, unaffiliated black voting bloc who will not be bought off, who will not take our cues from the establishment, who will not be susceptible to campaign contributions and whatnot from white corporations and lobbyists and whatnot. We sorely need this, because, you know, we just can't have this. We just can't have black people being the reason that a racist white supremacist, a bona fide racist, not no racist suspect, okay? All right, you know, we're not talking about somebody we suspect of practicing racism. We're talking about somebody we know has practiced racism and oversaw the murders of plenty of black people in just 2011, and thought it was funny and was laughing and all kind of garbage. We just can't have that. We can't be the cause of white supremacists getting put into greater positions of power. We can't be that ignorant. We can't be that uninformed. We can't afford it. We just really can't. I don't care if it was Martin O'Malley. I don't care if it was whatever other person that was running for the Democratic nomination. You know, anybody would be better than Hillary Clinton, given her history, given her criminality. And how in your right mind can you vote for a person, support a person who is at the center of a criminal investigation? And yes, I'm talking about that email. As a person who has worked for the U.S. government in the United States military, as a person who went through training in the handling of sensitive information, as a person who had a top secret security clearance, this woman violated all kind of protocols, calls, all kind of laws pertaining to how you handle this kind of stuff. And she's lied about it. Straight up lies. I mean, just off of that alone should disqualify her in your mind. So I'm not hearing anything from these Hillary Clinton supporters that sounds logical. That is, you know, people talking about experience. So what? She been a career politician since she was, you know, a young girl. She's been involved in politics. What experience? Yeah, she has a lot of experience in harming black people. Yes, she does. In harming poor people. In harming children. All this woman, whole life has been mapped out for this moment. And she was pissed off. They were pissed off that Barack Obama came along and delayed another Clinton from getting into office. But, you know, she didn't stop. Everything she has done has led up in her life, has led up to this moment. And I just don't, I don't understand why there is just so, well, I do understand it. We don't have access to many platforms that's giving us real information. They're just not enough. The other part of it, I think, is just laziness. As Max Parthas, one of the hosts of New Abolitionist Radio, who lives in South Carolina, had shared some information on Facebook about this one black person who said, you know, why they were voting for Clinton. And he said that, you know, well, I know Hillary Clinton, meaning he knows her name. I've heard about the Clintons and all this and that. But I got a job. You see that building over there? I work there, and I don't have time to be researching any other candidates, so I'm just going to vote. Now, come on. That's just damn laziness. That's just intellectual laziness. It's unacceptable behavior. Especially when we're talking about a Hillary Clinton. And you don't get Hillary Clinton without Bill Clinton. They're a team, they're a duo. So we have to do a better job at reaching people. We have to do a better job at you know, producing media, and not just producing the media, but getting it in front of the right people. We have to. And again, you know, it's not just in terms of if you're going to participate in politics. It's more than just about also, you know, determining who becomes president. But as, you know, the first story that I shared concerning prosecutor Ken Thompson out of Brooklyn, New York. You know, our votes do determine who becomes prosecutors, who becomes sheriff, who becomes mayor, who gets on a city council and whatnot. And these people, the things that they engage in, the legislation, the ordinances that they pass, the way that they conduct themselves in that office, the way that they run the jails and all of that stuff matters. It has a direct impact on people's lives. And so, therefore, considering how these people get into these positions, then your vote matters. Your vote really does matter. But it doesn't matter if it's not an informed vote. All you're doing is, hell, you might as well just, you know, not even vote if you're going to cast an uninformed vote. But all these things matter. You know, right now I'm doing my research on the candidates that are running for different offices here in North Carolina. We got a state Supreme Court judge who is coming up for re-election, and they've changed the rules on that. Right now, you wouldn't even say that the man is running for re-election. You get to vote on whether or not somebody else, he needs to be fired. You're not, yeah. And if you vote to keep him there, he's not really running. He's not really running for that seat. The way they, and I'm probably doing a terrible job in explaining it, but these are just new rules that recently popped up here in North Carolina in terms of how we elect people who sit on the state Supreme Court. You think that don't matter? And how people in North Carolina, these Supreme Court justices, interpret the law and whatnot, and the cases that come before them, certainly these things matter. And I've done my research on this guy, and I'm going to vote to send him home. Because looking at his record and looking at the things that he has supported in the past, I suspect him to be a racist. I don't see any concrete evidence where I could call him a white supremacist, but the things that he has supported, racist white males tend to support those things. So he's got to go. He's got to go. We also have some other local offices, city commissioner. I'm looking at right now. This guy by the name of Chris Kearney. Who is running for the North Carolina Senate, not the state Senate, but the North Carolina, not, you know, the federal government, U.S. government, but we're talking about my Senate district here in for the state of North Carolina and whatnot. These things matter, people. We can pretend like they don't. We can pretend like, you know, it don't have any impact on us when absolutely it has impact on everything you do. From the speed limit to what kind of water coming out your faucet. These things matter. And if you don't have the right people in office who are more likely than not to practice justice, then you're going to get what you got in Flint. You're going to get what you're getting in Michigan, period. You're going to get exactly what you vote for or don't vote for. Doesn't matter. You ain't got to participate in politics for politicians to have an impact on your life. And that's just a fact of the matter. Does that mean that, you know, you should put all your eggs in one basket in terms of, you know, the electoral basket? Certainly not. Certainly not. You need to be supporting black businesses. In fact, you need to be building black institutions. We got a lot of work to do in many different areas in our community. And there's no one size fit all solution to many of these problems. But to say that voting doesn't matter, I would say that the evidence would suggest otherwise. There's a reason why they don't want people convicted of criminals, of criminal codes and whatnot to vote. Which is primarily who? Black people who get labeled with that felony status and is not allowed to vote. And unless you're in one of those states where people have fought for you to have your rights restored. Because, you know, I have heard people say that, you know, voting doesn't matter because if it did, then, you know, it would be illegal. Well, it is illegal for a lot of people to vote. And they're looking to take those rights away from even more people. So it must matter something, or else I don't think they would go to such great lengths to disenfranchise people and keep them from voting. Here in the North, state of North Carolina, you know, they spent millions of dollars defending their court case on these voter IDs and whatnot. So obviously it matters. We've heard these people, well, here I can speak for North Carolina. We had one elected GOP official. He's no longer in office now, but, you know, he told it on them. He said that that's the whole point of the voter ID law is we want to suppress the voters that always voting for Democrats. Well, who is that? That's black people. Again, it's not to endorse the Democratic Party, but just because black people are voting in large numbers for the Democratic Party, that doesn't give Republicans an excuse to trample people's voting rights and whatnot. But again, if this stuff didn't matter, they wouldn't go to such great lengths to keep you from it. Is it all that matters? Of course not. It's not all that matters. You're a prepper, whether you're voting or not voting, you still need to be prepping for whatever. But at the same time, we cannot just sit around and act like, you know, these various people, whether it's in the local sheriff, whether it's the local mayor, whether it is the state senator, whether it is the state Supreme Court justice. We can't act like these people ain't having no impact on us, because they are. And we need to infiltrate every single area on the battlefield. We cannot turn our backs on anything. We need to be engaging the enemy in every people activity there is known to man. Because to me, to not oppose them is just simply not an option. It's not logical. Simply not. All right, the last thing I want to share with you is this comments from Minister Farrakhan on Hillary Clinton. Again, black voters in South Carolina helped her to a win on Saturday. Also that same Saturday, this is what Minister Farrakhan was saying. in his sermon that I guess they, you know, do theirs on Saturdays. So anyway, this is Mr. Farrakhan on Hillary Clinton.
How many of you voting for Hillary? You don't have to raise your hands. I do not blame you for wanting a female president. But that's a wicked woman. Now, listen, you can vote for her, but vote for her with knowledge. She can be sweet, but so can you. And you know when you're sweet but playing a game. All of a sudden, she know about Trayvon Martin. All of a sudden, the boy been dead nearly 2 years. Now she's talking about him like she met the mother. And these white people, this is Satan. You fall for that crap. Most of you that went to jail for having a little blunt in your pocket, they arranged that, the Clintons. Mass incarceration came about under the Clintons. Don't forget that. They call my young gangbangers super predators. And Black Lives Matter put it to her. She didn't know how to handle that. Call you a super predator that has no conscience, no sensitivity. Like you a dog, you an animal. We got to bring you to heel. You, my young brothers. This is what she said about you. And she didn't just say it. It became law and policy of the U.S. government under Bill Clinton and her wife, his wife. And now she's apologizing. But apologizing can't bring back the broken families. Apologizing can't bring back those that have been destroyed in prison life. Apologizing! She, in her person, orchestrated the destruction of Libya and the killing of Muammar Gaddafi. Gaddafi was my friend. He was my brother. She lied. He was going to kill all his people. No, he wasn't. He was just going to kill those rebels that America seized on their dissatisfaction, made a counter-revolutionary move, and then used it to bring NATO in to bomb and destroy his air defense, and then move to kill him. Now Libya is a failed state. All the refugees fleeing out of Syria, fleeing out of Libya, fleeing out of North Africa is because of policies of the government of the United States of America and her specifically. Now, when they release all those emails that they haven't released yet, it'll show you how she maneuvered our president. And maybe you won't think so well of her when you see how she talked to him. White people don't talk to black people. I don't give a damn what position you got, like you the boss. They always talk to you like they're the boss. Well, the only way you'll ever be the boss, if you come and submit to Allah and follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and come on and unite with me.
All right, so that was Minister Farrakhan on Saturday telling the truth about Hillary Clinton. And again, those emails show that the reason they went into Libya was because Gaddafi was talking about lifting Africa to world power status by uniting all of Africa under a gold-backed currency. All right, to lift her to her true place among nations on this planet. Also to keep the French in power, where they are still colonizing at least 14 different African nations. That's why they went in there and they did that, what they did. And then stood by while the Arab militias that they backed started slaughtering all those black people. How do you as a black voter vote for a person with a track record like that? How do you vote for a known liar like that? A criminal. She can now say Black Lives Matter all she wants to say. But for the past 30 years, she has shown us that black lives don't matter to her unless those black bodies are in a prison. Then they matter. So he telling the truth about Hillary Clinton. And that just goes to show you that many of these so-called people, like let's say Michael Eric Dyson, I think that's his name. You know, the black dude is out here telling everybody why they should vote for Hillary Clinton and saying she's not a racist and all this and that. You know, those people have shown themselves to be immoral, just as immoral as she is, because ain't no person with any kind of moral conscience who is knowledgeable about the things of Hillary Clinton. And Mr. Dyson isn't ignorant about Hillary Clinton. But anyone who is knowledgeable about the dirty dealings of the Clintons over the past 30, even 40 years, there's no way in good conscience they could come before you and say, you know, I recommend that you vote for this woman. Why? Because she got experience. Experience at what? Fucking over black people. That's what she got most experience in. So, no, thank you. So we got a lot of work to do, man. We just got a lot of work to do. I would like to think that the reason so many people in South Carolina, so many black voters, 84% of the black voters in South Carolina voted for Hillary Clinton, I can only deduce that they weren't informed. I'm not going to call them dumb. I'm not going to call them stupid or anything like that. I'm just going to say they uninformed about Hillary Clinton. They're just uninformed. They didn't do the research. They just simply did what their pastor told them to do. Simply did what elected black officials told them to do. Just did what black talking heads, showcase blacks in media, told them to do. And they didn't ask the right questions. They didn't seek out the correct answers. And that's the only thing that I can point to without, you know, being derogatory towards them as, you know, why, to explain why so many black people voted for a known racist. It's because they must have didn't know she was a racist. We got to do a better job at informing people and getting them the information, and we need to be doing this even in off-election years. Which reminds me, we also cannot be taking elections off. If you voted in 2012, you should have voted in 2014. Because there were elections. You can't, as a voting bloc, to be effective, You cannot take elections off, because then you're not making any gains whatsoever. You can elect a president, but then if you don't go in at the next midterms and then give that president the majority that will work with them, then you get what we got from Barack Obama, the past 8 years of nothing being done, except that which has been done has been harmful to black and poor people. You'll work with them on those sort of things, but in terms of fighting for our issues, or any, if he wanted to, he it's not much he could have done, except for, you know, through executive orders. But I'm not going to rehash past programs on his unwillingness to use executive orders to attack race, the system of racism and white supremacy. So, just sad. It's just sad. We'll see how the black voters vote in the rest of the country on Super Tuesday. I think you got about maybe 15 different states that might be holding primaries tomorrow, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see if this is an anomaly or is this a pattern. A pattern that is showing us that we have a lot of work to do in terms of educating black voters so that they don't make fool of themselves by voting for known racist white supremacists who have brought much harm upon black people globally. That's my program. Again, Tando Radio Show will be on air at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines of USA Inc. Casualties are being created out there on the battlefield every day, and you need to develop battlefield awareness and battlefield skills that would prevent the likelihood that you'll become one of those casualties. Again, there aren't any foolproof methods, but there are things you can do to decrease the likelihood of your victimization. That said, peace and blessings to all. We'll be back on air with Black Talk Radio News tomorrow.
I would like to say that we're one tonight. Let us be one in the future. Power to all of the people.
Yeah, KRS-One, Brother Jay. History, y'all. Turn it up. Ha ha. You know what time this is. We gotta.
Uptown, downtown, midtown, hit them all, hit them all. My manifest culture, come make it up. Worldwide DJ, contest ambassador.
Yeah. KRS, Brother Jay, what you say?
A new day, a new way for the DJ to spin it up. Rap in the struggle, time to break, put some limit up. Worldwide DJ, Brother Jay, mash it up.